FM Update News. I'm Eva DeLapp. It's 9:02. All 25 fishermen have been found guilty of fishing for king salmon on the Kuskokwim River during a 12-day closure in 2012. The fishermen's trials ended last week at the Bethel Courthouse. Their attorney, James J. Davis Jr., argued that their subsistence practices are a sacred way of life. The Association of Village Council Presidents says this ruling continues the clash between the state and tribes, as elders had given their blessing for fishing during the closure so families could eat. AVCP President Myron Nanig says that he would have liked to not only see a different court ruling, but a different approach to restrictions that happened last year, like looking at commercial pollock fleets that throw away bycatch salmon.
The fact that we brought this to trial and had this decision made by a judge that they were guilty based on whatever rules and regulations that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game had put in place shows that, you know, we're not agreeing with the science and that the science needs to do more to provide for opportunities, and there should have been alternatives in place rather than a full 12-day closure.
The Association of Village Council Presidents is currently working with the fishermen's attorney in order to support them in an appeal to the Alaska Court of Appeals. The AVCP has to wait for court records to be delivered to the fishermen's attorney before they can move forward. AVCP President Myron Nanig.
With this, the court has ruled that our people are criminals, even though they say that they've reduced it down to violations. What's the difference between a violator and a criminal? But the courts have stated that our people are criminals now because they fished for food.
During the trial, the state recognized that Yupik subsistence fishing is, quote, religiously based conduct, but Nanig says the state needs to bend over backwards to prevent infringement on a religion and a culture that has been around for centuries. National Weather Service staff are in Galena monitoring rising Yukon River water and conducting flyovers to check on one particular jam. APRN's Lori Townsend reports that at 9 p.m. last night, hydrologist Ed Plum said 20 miles downriver from Galena, ice is hung up at a notorious spot for jamming, called Bishop's Rock. Plum says the river makes a tight bend and ice gets stuck there. He says it's not just broken ice floating down that is catching. There is still solid river ice. Plum says the water crept up throughout the day, rising 15 feet between Sunday morning and evening.
There is water going over the bank here in Galena, and it's starting to fill in a bunch of the old sloughs and go over several roads along the river. And there are some houses and structures near the river in Galena that have water up to them and around them.
Greg Moyer is the interim city manager for Galena. He says he watched the water rise all day yesterday. Moyer says the main road is eroding and some pipes have been exposed.
We have opened up a shelter in town at the high school for our elders and others that want to, you know, spend the night there. But it is a wait-and-see game right now, just to see when that ice jam is gonna break.
2 miles above Bishop's Rock, the water levels are so low, sandbars are showing. Plum says breakup is running at least 2 weeks later than normal. He said in Koyukuk, the river ice is still frozen with no cracks showing. He says residents there are also concerned about flooding. Plum says flying toward Galena on Sunday morning, he observed Yukon ice far upriver from Galena.
And that was a continuous bank-to-bank flow from Ruby all the way down to Galena to where the ice jam is. So there's a lot of ice upriver, and that's about a 70-mile stretch of ice.
Plum says because breakup is so late, rapid warming is a big concern. He says temperatures in Galena and Koyukuk were in the 70s on Sunday. State and federal agencies are debating who will clean up abandoned oil well sites in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. But another environmental hazard has yet to be addressed: abandoned in rural Alaskan communities. Del Conrad is CEO of Rural Alaska Fuel Services, or RAFS. The nonprofit now operates on its own without federal or state money, but it was originally established by the Denali Commission in 2004 to help rural Alaskan communities manage their bulk fuel facilities. Conrad says rural Alaska has many abandoned tank farms. A conservative estimate by the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative numbers about 1,600 or more.
Some of the first Denali Commission tank farms went in 99 or 2000. So we're 12 or 13 years out with tanks being left sitting often in the middle of a town, sometimes clean, sometimes not clean, so they may have fuel sitting in them still, and no maintenance being done. So they're gradually decaying, rusting out, and becoming a potential environmental risk, but also a health and safety risk.
A health and safety risk, especially for youth in rural communities.
Some of the tanks have been, for example, used as huffing stations for kids who discovered they could get inside, get out of the rain, get away from their parents and the elders' view, and sniff glue and paint and all those kinds of things. I mean, it's a serious issue.
Conrad says there is no system right now to properly dispose of old fuel tanks. There's not even an inventory to track them. Currently, RAFS is working to assist in removing old fuel, cutting up tanks, and disposing them in local landfills. Conrad says the cost is too high to transport the metal to a scrapyard.
It's been village by village as we become aware that someone needs to have those taken care of. Then we'll try to aggregate everyone in the community that has those tanks and take care of them all.
He says typically there has been community pressure on fuel tank owners, such as school districts and the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, to remove the old tanks. However, funding is limited.
Frankly, when you're out there paying $6 or $7 a gallon for fuel, and it's going to cost you $50,000 or $75,000 to have the tanks removed in your village, that's a big adder to the cost of fuel in that community, and it's difficult for them to pay.
The Denali Commission does not pay for deconstruction. Most often, tank owners take on the cost themselves, with some funding granted by CDQ groups and nonprofits. Conrad says that funding from the state has been asked for these past 2 years, but has not been granted. By turning away from this problem, Conrad adds, there is a much bigger potential for problems in the future if these old tanks fail. Before World War II and in the decades since, tens of thousands of Alaska Natives and Native Americans have enlisted in the armed forces to serve their country at a rate much greater than any other ethnicity. Yet, among all the monuments and statues along the National Mall in Washington, D.C., not one stands in recognition. A grassroots effort is brewing among tribes across the country to change that, while Democratic Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii has introduced legislation that would clear the way for the National Museum of the American Indian to begin raising private funds for a memorial. The president of the National Congress of American Indians, Jefferson Keel, says it's an effort both sides of the political aisle can get behind and something that just needs to be done. The price of gold in New York has fallen $5.20, trading at $1,387.30. Silver has fallen 24 cents, trading at $22.49. Alaska Airlines Flight 151 arrived in Nome at 8:55 this morning. It's expected to depart at 9:42. Unofficially 38 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 10 minutes after 9 o'clock.